You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
We bring you the most significant stories of the year
as they were reported by your friends and neighbors.
The face of Bloomington continues to transform.
While local residents fight to save parts of the city they love,
local people join protests near and far
as Hoosiers help elect Republicans across state and federal governments.
From local to state to national news,
WFHB brought you the stories affecting our community.
Here are the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
Welcome to the top stories of 2016. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. Today is number 10 on our countdown, Hoosiers Join the Pipeline Fight. For many WFHB listeners, the first news of the protests in North Dakota probably came in August. By that time, members of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe had already been demonstrating for months in opposition to a project they said could endanger their water supply. But there'd been relatively little media coverage of the protests. Democracy Now! First reported on the protests on August 18th, after activists successfully forced Dakota Access to temporarily stop drilling. But Amy Goodman's coverage drew much more widespread attention during the first weekend in September. That's when construction crews bulldozed a site the tribe had identified as sacred ground. During the ensuing protests, the company's security guards used dogs to attack protesters. Goodman's crew was on hand to capture video of the incident.
I was like walking, throw the dog on me straight, even without any warning, you know? Look at this, look at this.
The dog,
yeah, the dog did it, you know? Look at this.
Man, your dog just bit this protester. Your dog just bit that protester. Are you telling the dogs to bite the protesters? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth.
And she's still standing here threatening.
You can't put your blame on the dog. You're an evil woman.
Democracy Now! Released their video online on Sunday, September 4th. It was quickly picked up by many other news outlets, including NPR. The next day, WFHB's Daily Local News brought listeners a story from a local woman with connections to the protests. This story is read by WFHB anchor Don Guerra.
Native Americans from around the country continue to protest in North Dakota today in opposition to an oil pipeline they say threatens a major water supply. The 1,100-mile Dakota Access Pipeline would stretch from North Dakota to Illinois. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has led protests against the project, which they say could make nearby water undrinkable and disturb burial sites. Over the weekend, a private security firm reportedly used dogs to attack some protesters. Monroe County resident Carmelita Plains Bull is a member of the Crow Nation, one of many tribes that have joined in the protests.
We continue to abide by these federal laws and or state laws and or municipal city laws. They continue to oversight our tribal laws, our sovereign laws, our international treaty laws. Here's this oil corporation that's been licensed to destroy. And now they're allowing security dogs to bite women, pregnant women, elderly women, and children that are there.
Plains Bull says she has been particularly frustrated by the lack of mainstream media coverage of the protests.
If this were happening in Egypt, if this were happening in China and or Russia, it would have made headlines. But unfortunately, corporations such as this oil company has not been covered. And I'm asking the nation, why not?
Protests continued near the pipeline construction site for months. There were many concerns voiced by demonstrators, but the primary issue was that the pipeline was slated to pass beneath the Lake Oahe Reservoir and the Missouri River. Concern was that the project could eventually contaminate the water supply of the Sioux Tribe and others. As attention grew around the country, thousands of people traveled to the area to deliver supplies and take part in the demonstrations. On October 26th, the Daily Local News reported on a Bloomington man who was swept up during a mass arrest. This story is read by WFHB anchor Scott Weddle.
Bloomington resident Aaron Pollitt was one of more than 140 people arrested this past weekend while opposing construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Pollitt says he was arrested at about 11 a.m. Saturday morning. He was part of a group that marched toward the pipeline construction site near Standing Rock in North Dakota. Video released yesterday by The Intercept shows a group of protesters marching peacefully until they are eventually surrounded by armed police. Video shows police marching toward the group, then shoving some protesters before eventually grabbing some people and throwing them to the ground. It appears that some protesters attempted to retreat, but police chased them. It was during that time that Pollitt says he was arrested.
I mean, a lot of people got tackled and pepper sprayed, but my group was surrounded. We were like, oh, well, you got us. So that went pretty peacefully. And then they handcuffed us all and put us into buses that they had driven up, shipped us all to Morton County Jail, and processing until they finally put us in cells in our jail blocks. That took a lot of people, didn't get to their jail blocks for something like 16 hours of processing, just because there were so many people.
Pollitt was released from the Morton County Jail on Sunday. He spoke today via cell phone from North Dakota, where he was still waiting to be arraigned. Charges may include inciting a riot and criminal trespass. He says concerns about the environment were a large part of what inspired him to participate in the actions at Standing Rock.
I'm a big believer in the great changes that we as modern people need to make in the way we use the resources of our planet. But also, I'm really, really grateful to be able to combine that effort with the effort of the Native peoples here and their fight to have their old treaties recognized.
Pollitt is not the only Bloomington resident to travel to Standing Rock recently. The actions have drawn several participants from the Bloomington area, including some residents who brought supplies to the camp. Pollitt says despite being arrested, participating in the protest has been, quote, a profound experience, unquote.
It's one of the greatest acts of nonviolent action towards stopping something that I've certainly ever been a part of or I've maybe seen in my lifetime. But it's also some of the greatest violent opposition of the state that I've ever been a part of. They're really cracking down on peaceful protesters, and it's been sad to see.
A leader from the Standing Rock Sioux Nation has asked the U.S. Attorney General to investigate whether civil rights violations occurred during the police crackdown.
Aaron Pollitt was far from the only Bloomington resident to travel to Standing Rock. Several groups of local residents made the more than 1,000-mile trek to deliver supplies and to participate in the resistance, and many more demonstrated solidarity from afar. On November 16th, we brought listeners this report about a rally in downtown Bloomington. WFHB anchor Janae Cummings reads this story.
About 150 people rallied and marched through downtown Bloomington last night, joining more than 300 groups across the country, taking actions in opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline. The pipeline is currently being constructed in North Dakota, and Native American groups have led months of protests against the project, which could threaten the water supplies of nearby tribes. Yesterday's actions began with a demonstration at the Monroe Dam, then moved to downtown Bloomington. Angela Kane, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, tells WFHB she believes that actions around the country are having an effect.
There's too many people to not at least look at, you know. I definitely think so. I mean, the droves of people that have gone out there, out to Standing Rock, and still are, and still continue to, and I think the world is opening their eyes.
After a rally at the IU sample gates last night, the crowd moved into the street. Marchers moved west on Kirkwood Avenue, then south on College Street, and eventually marched past the Bloomington Police Station on 3rd Street.
Fight back!
Stand up!
Fight back!
Stand up!
Fight back!
Hands off native soil, water, not oil!
Hands off native soil, water, not oil!
They say get back, we say fight back! They say get back!
Although the march did block traffic, there were no major conflicts with drivers. After the march was finished and demonstrators returned to the sample gates, WFHB spoke with a Bloomington resident, Tracy Jordan, who helped lead some of the chants. Jordan says she was motivated to participate partly by what she called broken treaties. Demonstrators say the pipeline violates the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868, which guarantees the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe shall enjoy the undisturbed use and occupation of its land.
When the federal government encroaches and breaks treaties, it sets really terrible precedent.
And they're doing that right now. So no matter what the federal government is saying, no matter what the Army Corps of Engineers are saying, the Dakota Access Pipeline is still being, work hasn't stopped. So no one's making them do it. And so it's up to us to make the federal government live up to their treaty promises and to back up their words with action.
The Army Corps of Engineers effectively delayed the project on Monday, saying the government won't grant a permit for the pipeline to cross under the Missouri River until there are further talks with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. It's unclear how those negotiations will proceed, and they will likely be affected by President-elect Donald Trump's administration.
You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. In today's episode, we take a look back at how Bloomington residents became involved in efforts to block development of the Dakota Access Pipeline. That was a report from November 16th. Among the many Bloomington residents who visited Standing Rock, there were a few WFHB reporters. Correspondent Leah Carter visited the camps during a particularly tense time, the week of Thanksgiving. She brought us this report.
Protect the water! Cross the bridge and go to the left!
Everyone needs to move south of the bridge. You are criminally trespassing being on the bridge. You will be arrested for criminal trespass. And munitions will be utilized to effect those arrests. Move to the south of the bridge to avoid this.
On the night of Sunday, November 20th, No Dapple peaceful protesters were subject to some of the strongest police brutality which the almost 10-month-long movement has seen. The 18-hour standoff between police and protesters, which lasted from 4 p.m. on Sunday until almost noon the next day, began when people decided to remove a three-week-old police barricade of Highway 1806, the road which runs next to the camps.
These are tactics that the U.S. military has been using against indigenous communities since first contact, and, you know, not just the U.S. cavalry, but even before, when this was not yet the United States. So these are tactics to, you know, exterminate people. And they continue the cultural genocide, the environmental genocide that's being perpetrated, all to protect the interests of big oil and corporate corporations that extract from the earth. We are beyond that kind of extraction economy, and we need to move into a more sustainable economy that supports all life.
Now, two lawsuits are being filed against the Morton County Police Department for excessive use of force, after they greeted peaceful protesters in full riot gear and shot rubber bullets, bean bags, tear gas canisters, and concussion grenades into the crowd, and used water cannons on people in sub-zero temperatures. Colorado attorney Angela Bibbins, who volunteers with the legal collective at Standing Rock, believes that their use of force was unlawful and put people's lives at risk.
What I can tell you about rubber bullets is that they might not kill you. That doesn't mean that they aren't lethal. I think that's the thing that Morton County would like the world to believe, and certainly those police departments who have accumulated these kinds of militarized weapons would like that propaganda to be spread. But I can tell you from the injuries that have been perpetrated against water protectors that there's certainly a high risk of lethality, especially in conditions that what we saw on Sunday after people had been sprayed with water cannons in 23-degree temperatures. So people were already cold, exposed, wet, hypothermic, and then were battered with mace to the point where they lost bodily function, had vomited at the front lines. One person went into an epileptic seizure. One person, an elder, lost consciousness at the front lines, fortunately was revived by medics, but is still struggling. And the beanbags that, you know, they sound innocuous. They sound like a child's toy, but there's nothing childish or toy, you know, there's no toying around with them. They are like lead coated with plastic that can come at you at an alarming rate and cause some serious damage, not just soft tissue damage, but can really, you know, be a beating.
As Angela and I spoke, we could hear one of the four unmarked surveillance planes circling very low to the ground and above the camp.
I can tell you from a personal perspective, having slept in the legal tent and been in camp almost continuously for 3 months, that it's alarming the way that we are surveyed, that it's nonstop, that sometimes we get a break at night, but then it'll start up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I think it's really just to sort of create fear and chaos. And some people, like myself at this point, I'm kind of used to it. But, you know, that night, Sunday, there was a gray plane with no lights and no markings that flew over this camp for hours. Was it a DAPL plane? Was it law enforcement? I don't know. I know that there are folks, you know, smarter than me, who have more resources, that are doing those investigations. But it's definitely a huge concern that there's so much surveillance going on at this camp.
Water protectors are subjected to a number of around-the-clock surveillance tactics. In addition to the unmarked airplanes, floodlights from the DAPL construction site and police surveillance sites keep the Ocheti Shakoan camp bright, even in the middle of the night. Police also use cell phone jamming and international mobile subscriber identity catchers, otherwise known as MC catchers, in order to obtain data from cell phones and eavesdrop on telephone calls. Tech activist and founder of the group Support the Revolution, Terrence Daniels, and the volunteer IT team at Standing Rock are working against these surveillance measures to create a secure connection at the camp.
Look, our opponents are very uninspired, right? They're a one-trick pony. They've got violence and that's it, right? We've got an entire, you know, all the minds of the world can come up with much better ideas than that. So we're trying to show that, you know, you can enter a market and, or, you know, look at a problem and start thinking of solutions and ways that we can work together to fix those solutions and not just carpet bombing each other. They've used every single kind of jamming and surveillance, you know, equipment that they could at this very moment. If you notice, they fly the planes over. They do, you know, it's not like they're hiding that they're doing surveillance of us. That's just one of the tools in 2016 that the police use. Like they use all of the other, they've got an MRAD sitting down there. They've got all sorts of toys and, you know, tools that they use against us.
These items include a long-range acoustic device, which is capable of causing permanent damage to someone's ears if they're within range.
When you talk about our government, like really you're using items that are going to ruin everybody that's been exposed to that, right? It has permanent damage to their ears on unarmed American citizens. Like, that's just not logical. That's not the way our country should have went.
Despite the surveillance tactics and threats of police violence and arrest, protesters and volunteers alike choose to stay and fight the pipeline.
We're going to put our lives down to try to prevent that. We're going to remain peaceful, because with that, we are going to win. It's already done. It's not going to happen. Something's going to happen between now and then. A big miracle, something big is going to happen. There's a lot of shifts going on, and there's a lot of forces involved, and we're aware of those forces, but they're also on our side. We have the side of creation, so we're going to win. We know this. We take comfort in that, and that's why we stick around. We're not going nowhere.
You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. We're taking a look back at how Bloomington residents became involved in efforts to block development of the Dakota Access Pipeline. WFHB correspondent Leah Carter brought us that story, reported from North Dakota during Thanksgiving week. On December 4th, the Army Corps of Engineers made an announcement that sounded like good news for demonstrators. The Corps was denying an easement that the pipeline developers needed to drill underneath Lake Oahe. But response from anti-pipeline activists was mixed. The next day, we aired this report, which is read by WFHB anchor Maria McKinley.
Activists in Standing Rock, North Dakota, are warning that the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline is not over, despite an easement denial from the Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps announced yesterday it would deny a permit to drill beneath Lake Oahe, where the pipeline is currently scheduled to run. Bloomington resident Mark Haggerty, a veteran who has traveled to Standing Rock to protest the pipeline, says the mood there was jubilant yesterday as news spread about the permit denial. But he says there is also concern among demonstrators.
We saw the response from the different people involved in the corporations and how they're just going to keep drilling and nothing has changed as far as we can tell. And so the Indians up here are concerned that white people will leave and leave them vulnerable to the police again.
Haggerty called WFHB from a community center on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Shortly after the Army Corps' announcement, the companies developing the pipeline issued a statement reiterating their commitment to finishing the project. Sunoco Logistics and Energy Transfer Partners stated they, quote, fully expect to complete construction of the pipeline without any additional rerouting in and around Lake Oahe, unquote. President-elect Donald Trump, who owns stock in Energy Transfer Partners, has voiced support for the pipeline project, and it is possible his administration could reverse the Army Corps' decision next year. The Sacred Stone Camp, where many of the demonstrators have been camping, issued a statement that, quote, the fight is not over, and urging people around the country to hold solidarity actions, unquote. In Bloomington, a local group affiliated with 350.org is organizing actions every day of December at noon on the courthouse square.
That story was from December 5th. The 350.org group did indeed follow through with their plans to hold actions each day at noon, and the Daily Local News aired this story about one of their actions on December 12th.
A handful of local residents stood outside the Sunoco gas station on South Walnut Street this afternoon, demonstrating opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline. Sunoco plans to operate the controversial pipeline should it eventually be completed. Dave Simcox is part of a local affiliate of 350.org, which organized the demonstration.
We're out here protesting against Sun Oil Company, who is the parent of the Dakota Access Pipeline and are responsible for a lot of the abuse that was occurred in the last few months over the summer with the Sioux tribes at Standing Rock. You know, the militarized police were so aggressive in the past. So this is on Sun Oil Company, on Sunoco as well. It's not just the government. You know, they're operating on treaty lands they shouldn't be operating on.
350.org, an organization dedicated to fighting climate change, has been holding anti-pipeline protests in Bloomington every day since December 1st. One of the protesters, Wes Kamenga, says there are multiple distinct reasons to oppose the pipeline, which would carry oil 1,200 miles from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota to southern Illinois.
There's the worry about it, a pipeline break contaminating the water of the tribe. The legitimacy of that is greater because the area where it's being built, though it's not technically on their reservation, it's land that was legally belongs to them according to a treaty that was never abandoned. And then also climate change. Like, we just really, there should be no more pipelines. Every pipeline that is built increases the danger to the future of human civilization.
Kamenga held a sign reading, "Boycott Sunoco, Standing Rock, no pipeline." Today's protest comes more than a week after the Army Corps of Engineers announced they would deny an easement for the pipeline to pass under Lake Oahe, which could force developers to reroute the project. But Simcox says the fight is far from over.
Oh, I think that's just temporary. As soon as Trump's in office, I mean, Who's he nominated to be the head of the EPA? Some climate denier out of Oklahoma. So, no, I this is just the first salvo. And thank goodness, you know, we've slowed him down. But, you know, they're going to put that pipeline in hell or high water. And the only way we're going to do it is, you know, for everybody to stand up and say no.
That story was from December 12th. Since then, the local affiliate of 350.org has continued to demonstrate each day at noon. Across the country, various actions continue in opposition to the pipeline, including a group in Illinois who hope to prevent the project from being built underneath the Kaskaskia River. On December 13th, the day after the protests at the Sunoco in Bloomington, President-elect Donald Trump chose former Texas Governor Rick Perry to lead the U.S. Department of Energy. Perry is on the board of Energy Transfer Partners, the company responsible for developing the Dakota Access Pipeline. You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. We're counting down the most significant stories of the year as they were reported by our team of more than 100 citizen journalists. You just heard number 10 on our countdown, Hoosiers Join the Pipeline Fight. We took a look back at how Bloomington residents became increasingly involved in the efforts to block development of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Tune in tomorrow at 5:30 when story number 9 is revealed. The Best of 2016 is a production of the WFHB News Department. Today's episode was produced by myself, Joe Crawford. Correspondent Leah Carter contributed to the reports. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.